League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 from the renterswarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. A moment here for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. We always thank them for their support of soccer on the radio. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT, 713-322-HURT. You might be in a car accident, boat, motorcycle. We hope not, but if you are, industrial, construction, plant, refinery, you might drive an 18-wheeler, the Daspit Law Firm is going to treat your case as if it's their own. DaspitLaw.com, the Daspit Law Firm, working for you 24-7, fighting for your right for compensation. It's the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. And John Daspit, by the way, he goes down to Dynamo Games, big fan of the game of soccer, and they are bilingual as well, which leads me to an interview that I've been very excited about doing. There is a brethren amongst play-by-play guys in the sports world. We've had the pleasure for since 1987 to 2016 to listen to Bill Brown. Many know him as Brownie, the Astros TV play-by-play man. He's in the Texas Sports Hall of Fame. He's on the Media Wall of Honor down at Minute Maid Park. So he's really a Houston Astros and Houston, Texas institution. So we're going to dig into a number of different things, straight from the Astros in the World Series to the art of play-by-play, in the words of Bill Brown. He joins me now. Bill, thank you so much for doing this. Very excited to do this interview with you.
Well, Glenn, it's all my pleasure, and I've enjoyed listening to you as well.
Well, that's something I'll put in the memory bank there, because that's a great compliment from you. So I'm immediately thinking of you when the Astros win the World Series, and having been such a big part of this organization, having watched this transformation. Just take me through the emotional, roller coaster that culminated here with a World Series win.
Well, Glenn, I think I was more in the role of a fan, not working the postseason. But then again, when you're doing television at our level, the club level, you don't work postseason. The networks come in for the very first round of the playoffs. So for Todd Callis and Jeff Blum, and for me for years when we were in the playoffs, it's extremely frustrating to be sidelined for the most important games of the year. But that's what you sign up for. You know it's coming. And as a fan, it was just, I could relate. I was sitting in the seats a lot with fans and even some Yankee fans during the ALCS, just the emotional roller coaster ride, I think is more acute, Glenn, for a fan than it is for a broadcaster, because a broadcaster has to maintain a certain sense of calm and be able to describe the action and not get too emotional about it. It's fine to be emotional to a certain point, but you can't let it all go, as you know.
Mm-hmm. 1987 to 2016, the Astros TV play-by-play man, Bill Brown, joining us. You know what I love about baseball? Here's what I love. A lot of times, the play-by-play man is such an extension of the team. And, I mean, we could whip off the names in history, but I remember as a little kid, Ralph Kiner, Kiner's Corner, the New York Mets, Phil Rizzuto on Yankee broadcasts. That seems to be a little different in baseball. You become such a part of the identity of the club. And take me into how the Astros weave you in as one of the on-air talents.
Well, when I came here in 87, Gene Elston had been fired, so I was scared to death of a backlash from trying to move in when people were unhappy that Gene wasn't with the club anymore. Milo Hamilton, of course, was the lead play-by-play guy and very well known nationally as well as here. And so Milo really carried a lot of the radio and TV shows. At that point, we alternated between radio and TV, so everybody knew Milo. And I was just trying not to make mistakes, which is not a good way to go into the job. But the Astros have always treated me extremely well. And I think for a TV play-by-play guy, the most important thing is the analyst, because he is going to carry the mail on television more so than the analyst on radio does. And I've been very fortunate to work with tremendous analysts.
Well, let's talk about a couple of them and their differences, starting with the Shays.
Well, the Shays was simply a joy to be around. We were together for 16 years. He had a marvelous sense of humor, which is what people like the most about Jim. He was very self-effacing. I think one thing people like about the least on former players is when they don't feel that they ever made a mistake when they played the game and they want to revisit the time that they played the game. General fan does not like that approach too much. But Jim didn't do that. He actually was at his best in terms of entertaining when it was a lopsided game. And people would tell me on the street corner, hey, I hope that the game is going to be lopsided by the sixth inning, because then the Seinfeld references come out and they're rolling, you know, when they listen to JD on games like that. He just had a sense, Glenn, of that switch going off in his head that, hey, we're not doing baseball anymore now. We're doing entertainment. And he was the best I've ever been around for that. But Larry Durker was tremendous. Bill Worrell, fun to work with. Alan Ashby. So Jeff Blum, it's been tremendous, I think, for fans to hear all those guys do the analytical role.
Boy, you just whipped off a bunch of good names. I'm going to come back to one or two of them. But let me go back to what you just said about entertainment. And, you know, I look at baseball, I'm going, wow, this is so different. I'm trying to imagine myself doing this, because you have time in between pitches. You story tell. You might even drop out of the story, call the pitch, go back to the story. It's really, really interesting the way it's done. And it is, to me, the same in soccer. It's certainly it's the sum of two parts that make up a good team. I don't think any question. But entertainment, how much of it is entertainment? And have you seen the play-by-play role change maybe in Major League Baseball as we get into a new era with social media and all these other things that come into the mix now?
It has changed, Glenn. There's a lot more sponsored material during games, which means less time for storytelling. And with the analytics in the game, and especially the younger fans want those statistics. They want those, you know, the rather bizarre off-the-street corner statistics that many people don't care about. Some people do. So, you know, it's kind of a balance there that you're hoping to strike between the statistical wonks and the fans who are older and don't want to hear the numbers. And you never really know if you're hitting the target or not, but it's just kind of a balancing act. For the play-by-play guy, he's mostly a traffic cop, trying to deal with the sponsored elements that have to be on the air to make things go, and work in the analysts. And then, you know, we have the reporter now, Julia Morales, excellent. Greg Lucas for many years, excellent.
Yeah, great.
They are worked into the whole mix as well. We have conversations sometimes with them, and it's a matter of, well, are we going to have a conversation here with the sideline reporter, or do we have time for that? So it's a little busier than it was 30 years ago.
2013, Bill Brown was a Texas Sportscaster of the Year. Also worked at Xavier and Cincinnati. So tell me about Sedalia. Am I pronouncing this right? Sedalia, Missouri?
Yes.
So tell me about growing up in Sedalia. I'm going to think you played a lot of sports growing up, and then how you made a transition into the media side of things.
I did play a lot of sports, none of them well. And
well, you're the most honest guy I've ever met. What do you mean? You didn't hit three home runs in a high school game?
No. I don't think I ever got on base three times in a high school game unless they hit me with pitches, because I couldn't hit. I think it was a blessing, Glenn, because I found out when I was 14 that there was no way I could ever be an athlete. So that turned me toward broadcasting at that point. And I just took the journalism class in high school and got on the local radio. It was a small town of about 17,000. And it was possible to go on a 1,000-watt radio station and do the high school news of the week and things of that nature. And then just kept hanging around. They'd chase me away from the station, but I'd get them to let me sit in on high school football and basketball. And that's what I urge youngsters today who want to get started in the business. Start at that level, because you need to pay some dues and you need to watch how the play-by-play guys work at that level for your preparation.
Yeah, it's getting as much repetition and opportunity as you possibly can. And that's funny because my next question was all about that because, you know, I'm sure you did during your career. I certainly monthly get at least 4 to 10 inquiries from college kids who want tips on, you know, how to get into the business and everything. So what would, outside of what you just told me, what would be some of the other tips that you would give to aspiring people? Because it is a highly competitive industry.
True, it is, Glenn. And I think actually the advice has not changed very much during the time that you and I have been broadcasting up to the present day. And that is, hey, whatever it takes to get on the air, if that means moving to a small town where your chances are better to be on the air, do that. You need to be on the air. This is a business in which a degree is helpful, but, you know, that degree is not a part of your tape that you send out when you're applying for jobs. They need to hear you on the air doing play-by-play, and that degree is not going to help you with that. It may have helped your preparation, but it's not something that you can put out there and say that's equal to this tape you're going to listen to. It's not equal.
He's joining us today, Bill Brown, and we're going to do a two-part interview with him, all things play-by-play and his opinions on sports and where it's going. Did the whole move to the heavy social media with players and athletes, how do you feel about that? Because there's real positives to it, I think, and there's also negatives to it, and we see athletes almost on a daily basis making huge blunders with social media. How did you feel about all this move to social media? Did it help you with your preparation? Did you find it interesting? Or did you just find it a bore?
I think it works both ways, Glenn. I think it was helpful at times to kind of know what a certain small segment of society might be thinking or might want to hear. But what I didn't like was people tweeting during a ball game, hey, talk about this, or don't talk about what you were just talking about. Mm-hmm. That, I think, is meddlesome. I think it's interfering with the job, and I think you're better off turning that off when that comes along. But I don't know. That was a part of our jobs. The ball club wants us to do that, wants us to engage with the public, and I do enjoy engaging with the public, just not necessarily in the eighth inning of a tie ball game when they're trying to tell us how to do our jobs.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, is it harder, you think, now for the sports fan to stay focused on whatever sport it is? And I would throw soccer in there as well. Is it harder for them to stay focused on an entire game?
I think it is. I think the attention span is almost nil today, and people switch channels all the time, which impacts our job somewhat in terms of needing to recap what happened and things along those lines. But I think it is. I think very, very few people watch a sporting event from beginning to end. You can assume that those people are not with you in the ninth inning who were with you in the first inning, because the percentage is very small.
All right, so here's I think sometimes what bothers me about professional sports now, and I would include Major League Soccer in this, is the lack of consequence in the regular season. It irks me. Too many people get in the playoffs in Major League Soccer. To me, it is a bit of a problem because I just when there's nothing, or it seems like there's nothing at stake, or hey, we got another game tomorrow, or you know, we got this fall pack position of the amount of teams that are going to make the playoffs, and it may be different for Major League Baseball. But do you think a lack of consequence in, like, the NBA, Major League Baseball, MLS, is that a problem?
I think it is to a point. And, you know, we talked about entertainment before. I think a lot of people are watching to be entertained. If it's a slam dunk in basketball, or, you know, some kind of breakaway goal in soccer, or maybe the guy makes a tremendous long goal that's, you know, bends it in there from 50 yards out or something like that. Just a spectacular play. I think that's really what people consider being entertained, maybe sometimes more than the outcome of the game if it's one of those inconsequential games you talk about.
You know what? When I was growing up, I remember Lou Brock coming up to the plate with the drag bunt. I remember the suicide squeeze. All those parts of baseball, to me, don't seem to be there. And those were exciting moments, you know, with a third baseman creeping in because they were trying to read the mind of a batter. And believe me, I'm not trying to act as though I know a lot about baseball here, but I'm just remembering when I was a kid. And those elements are gone, aren't they?
They are gone. It's a lot of home run or nothing these days. Home run or strikeout or walk, the three true outcomes, as they say. But, not as many three-run doubles as I'd like to see. Not as many bunts for hits as I would like to see. Steals of third with one out. Things along those lines. You're right. I always enjoyed a 3-2 ball game more than a 10-8 ball game because every base was precious. So that sacrifice bunt might win a game. And that's what I enjoyed when I was growing up.
Just to follow up, and then we're going to take a break here, and we're going to have more with Bill Brown. Those elements, could they ever come back in the game?
They could. They could. Hitters are not inclined to really perfect the small ball approach now. They don't really adopt much of a two-strike approach in many cases. But this year, the Astros were the best team at doing that, and that helped them to win in the World Series, making contact. And so it is important, but players don't always recognize that.
All right, so we do know that you've watched a few soccer games. So when we come back, I'm going to get your thoughts on soccer, and I'm going to relate it to baseball. And I'm really interested to hear some of your answers. Can you stick with us, Bill?
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll take a quick break here. It's the legendary Bill Brown joining me on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. Yes, baseball and soccer, mixing it tonight here with Bill Brown. We'll take a quick break here. As we go to break, I want to remind you about the Kings Court. This is a real soccer pub down in Edo. It's next to the stadium. It's at 903 Hutchins, the corner of Walker and Hutchins. They've got monitors everywhere down there. They've got Premier League matches, Dynamo matches, La Liga, the Champions League. They have everything that would fit whatever it is when it comes to watching soccer matches. And by the way, a lot of supporters groups go down there. So when Manchester United plays the Houston Red Army's down there with Tom Clare, when the Chelsea group is down there, the Bayou City Blues, it's really a fun place to be. 24 taps, full bar, extensive selection of spirits. But if you want to get down there with like-minded individuals watching games, that's the place to go. Kings Court, right downtown, right next to BBVA Compass Stadium, kingscourttx.com. Go in, say hello to Jay.
As Glenn mentioned, we'll have the second part of Bill Brown next week on Soccer Matters.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. We're going to wrap it up in a big way here tonight. We're going to talk what is going on in Atlanta with these crazy crowds and Atlanta United. But first, a quick word here for as the host of Soccer Matters, for Bud Light. I remind you, nothing goes better together than great friends in Bud Light. Dynamo in the Western Conference playoff final. It's here. Get out to BBVA Compass Stadium or get over to the Kings Court down in Edo. It's a great place to grab a Bud Light. But most importantly, when you grab that Bud Light, grab your friends, grab the bucket of Bud Lights, whether it's tonight, tomorrow, any other day of the week. Remember, it's not about the parties. It's about the friends you made along the way. Bud Light, the official beer of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 every Wednesday at 7 Central. A big thanks as always to Bud Light. Jason Longshore of Soccer Down Here. It's the podcast at Soccer Down Here at Longshoe, L-O-N-G-S-H-O-U. He's a commentator for Atlanta United. He joins us now. Jason, thank you very much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right. So let's talk about what has been an amazing year. And I just let me lob you a softball here and just kind of now that you've had an opportunity to kind of just sift through this entire season and the phenomenon that was what Atlanta was, what comes to mind?
It's just crazy to look back at it. I mean, the crowds, I think, is the number one thing, and not even just the sheer numbers, but the noise and the atmosphere generated. You know, it's easy to get people out one time for something new and something shiny. And Atlanta had done well with big events. You know, Mexican national team games always did well here. Friendlies with Club America, AC Milan did well here. But the passion around this team, I thought that would take more time. I thought it would take time for the fans to grab onto these players, but they did straight away. Opening night, back at the beginning of March, which feels like forever ago, so many people in Atlanta United gear, in the jersey, in the red and black and gold, in Bobby Dodd Stadium, that blew my mind. Just to see that many people fully emotionally invested from day one, I didn't expect it, and it's been the catalyst for everything else that's happened since.
Yeah, I think that's a tremendous point now that I really think about that when you're saying it. But how much of that was, you know, the lead up to this, the announcement of the team and Martino and players and tilling of the soil in Atlanta? I mean, how much of that comes down to what the front office did and the vision of this club?
That's it, exactly. It's all of that combined, because Atlanta United didn't go the route that so many other new MLS teams have gone. They didn't go sign a David Villa. They didn't go try to sign a big name. They went with steady growth. I mean, the city was ready for this first off. There were thousands of people on hand when the team was announced back in 2014. Thousands more on hand when the logo and the name was officially announced, even though it had been leaked about a week before.
And yeah, I heard you leaked it, Jason.
It was not me.
I'm just messing with you. It's really funny.
I
wouldn't be surprised if it was you, though. You're on top of everything down there.
I try to be, but that day I was actually with Darren Eels and Carlos Bocanegra. I worked for Soccer in the Streets, a great nonprofit here in the metro area. And I was with those guys when the leak happened. And we didn't know it had leaked until I actually got back to the office, but Darren was on the phone all afternoon, and we didn't know why, and then we found out a couple hours later. It was a chaotic time. But the team has just built every step along the way. Something new has happened, and it hasn't been a big splashy signing. It's just been solid moves to build a team that was a lot of fun to watch and really successful in year one.
Jason Longshore joining us here, commentator for Atlanta United at Soccer Down Here, and at Longshoe, Longshou. Is there any, and I don't think so, but is there any concern about novelty factor wearing off?
No, I really don't have that concern. I think the biggest thing is the team does have to keep being successful. You know, that's sports today, though. You know, I don't think that's uniquely an Atlanta thing.
Sure.
I think people want to support a winning team and a team that's fun to watch, and they, you know, check those boxes in year one. They're going to have to continue to do that. But I don't expect the novelty factor to be an issue. You know, so many people are season ticket holders now. You're talking 36,000 plus. Renewals were strong. I don't expect there to be a drop off. I think if anything, Atlanta United front office is considering opening up more of the stadium to season tickets because of the demand is there. And the gear is selling. I still driving around town. I still see the Atlanta United flags everywhere. It's the thing now. And Atlanta United has become really behind the Atlanta Falcons and NFL in this town and your college teams. Atlanta United has surpassed the Braves and surpassed the Hawks in really capturing the city.
Jason Longshore joining us here, Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. Before I get to Houston and Atlanta and some of the similarities in the market, my gut tells me they sold more than just Atlanta United. They sold the sport. They sold the diversity of the sport. They sold the city of Atlanta. Is it important, per se, to sell more than just your brand? Position that brand in the global game of soccer, and Atlanta pride?
The Atlanta pride thing is huge. And, I mean, I think back to the Atlanta Braves in 1991 when they had been awful for decades. And when they got strong, the whole city jumped on board. And that's what it felt like in a way here, because everyone was on board. And I just think back to so many friends of mine that, you know, I'm a sports fan. I've had Falcon season tickets. I go to Hawks games. I love sports in general, but soccer's always been my thing. And so many people that I was friends with due to other sports or other teams jumped on board with us. People I would never expect to be texting me asking why Tata Martino just made that substitution. that's how this was happening all season long. And it's just been a fascinating process. I think Atlanta Pride is big, but I think so much of it has just been connecting with people. You know, soccer's grown in Atlanta over the decades, but it hasn't ever connected in this way. And people felt like they were part of this the whole way through.
Jason, when I look at the cameras panning the crowd, and by the way, Atlanta was one of my teams that I'd like to watch in Major League Soccer, simply because I love the playing style as well, let alone the environments. But when I saw the cameras panning the crowd, I saw every type of ethnic group, every color, every ethnic group, every age, every gender. It was everything. And I kind of likened it to Houston because, you know, we always get dogged as not being a premier sports town. And, you know, we're not New York and L.A. I would kind of maybe put Atlanta there. Just speak to me about the diversity of the crowd, though, because there is a diverse crowd there. I mean, you got hardcore soccer people there. You got newbies. You got youth soccer people there. You got everything.
Yeah, incredibly diverse. And it really ran the gamut of people that I know were at these games. People that, you know, I grew up with playing soccer, you know, late 80s, early 90s. People who have coached here for years. People who are brand new fans. People who have been longtime Falcons fans who wanted to try this out and got hooked. I mean, I can't tell you how many people listen to our broadcasts on 92.9 The Game that listen to that station for Falcons coverage because they're the Falcons flagship. And we're like, hey, what is this soccer thing? I don't get it. And then after a couple games, they would be, hey, we listen to you every game. We want to hear everything about Atlanta United. It's just such a cool mix. And that's Atlanta. Atlanta is such a diverse city. And Houston is as well. You know, that's the beautiful thing about this is you can get all walks of life at these games. And when it's good soccer and it's successful and it can connect with people, I think you see what happened in Atlanta this year. In my opinion, it really can shepherd in a new era for MLS and I think open some doors. And it doesn't have to be a small thing. It can be big. And I think Atlanta showed that in 2017.
Yeah, I'll say. Bar's been raised a little bit, and I think that's the other beautiful thing that the Atlantas and the Seattles have done, and that is raise the bar for others because it's only going to lift everything. Jason Longshore joining us, Atlanta United commentator. Okay, so guys like Miguel Almiron, Yosef Martinez, your star players, are they out in the community a lot?
They have been, and for guys like Almiron and Martinez and Tito Villalba, you know, that was the other element of this that I don't think many people talked about this season is your star players for Atlanta United are primarily Spanish speakers first. And Atlanta United, you know, Atlanta has a strong Latino population, but it's been English language media that's barely jumped on board with this team in a big way. And that wasn't an issue. You know, I think a lot of people thought it might be at first, but Almiron jerseys, Martinez jerseys all over the stands. And those guys seem to really love the city. You know, Yosef Martinez was at Braves games a lot. Almiron was out at activities. A lot of those guys go to Hawks games. Tito Villalba is a huge basketball fan. And then the organization has been so involved in the community, and that comes from Arthur Blank. His foundation has done so much in the city. The team has been a big part of that, from youth events to actually investing in public school leagues in Atlanta public schools. They're doing a lot to look at the next generation for this club. You know, it's not just about selling as many tickets as possible now. It's about creating a culture, and they've really checked all the boxes on that.
Yeah, sinking roots for the long term. Doesn't surprise me Yosef Martinez would be at a baseball game being Venezuelan, right?
Yeah, and Inciarte for the Braves, I think they're actually pretty good friends, two Venezuelans in Atlanta, kind of dominating in both sports.
Pretty cool. You got a good young player in Andrew Carlton, who was with the under-17s. I had broadcasted that World Cup. Transfer rumors here. Last thing I want to talk to you. Are you buying this that Almiron and Martinez have had transfer overtures that maybe double what Atlanta United paid for them?
That sounded really big. And these were from MLSsoccer.com saying that over the summer, it was 20 to 25 million for Almiron and 10 million for Martinez. It's possible. I think Al Marone's maybe a little more likely at that number because he was pretty highly valued before coming here, and he did nothing to hurt his value. He only added to it. It's a tough spot for Atlanta United, and this is something with a fairly newer fan base that, you know, it's one of the big questions we get on soccer down here is, should they sell? What happens when they sell? How do they replace these guys? You know, kids who are growing up now as Miguel Almirón fans, what happens? You know, what do they think? Because it's a new process. But I think there is, for Almirón and for Martinez and every player, and we all know this, there is a price at some point that you have to make the sale. And I think that's what Atlanta has built this team on, is getting young talent in, putting them in that shop window, and giving them a platform to be successful going to Europe. Miguel wants to be in Europe. Not sure if it's going to be 2018. Tata Martino reportedly told Paraguayan media that it's going to be 2019 before they consider that. We'll see, but they're definitely attracting a lot of attention, you know, from these crowds, from these games being broadcast internationally, and their performances here for Atlanta.
Jason, you're a good man. Thank you very much for coming on tonight. I want to get you on again because I want to continue to talk what is an incredible story with Atlanta United and the sport of soccer in the city of Atlanta. Jason Longshore, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Anytime you need me. Thanks for having me.
All right. That's good stuff there from Jason. He is at Longshoe, L-O-N-G-S-H-O-U, also at Soccer Down Here Podcast. Quick word here for Liberty Kitchen. A couple of things to mention. Locations, 4 in Houston, River Oaks, Garden Oaks, Memorial City Heights. Garden Oaks is the beer garden. They've rolled out a new menu across the restaurants. A lot of tedious hard work to put that menu together, make it blend. They have done that. There are some BRC flashback menu items, dry-aged beef program. They've also got a breakfast happy hour at the Heights location. 8 to 9:30 a.m., $7 gets you a choice of 5 entrees and includes orange juice, coffee, milk, $2 Bellini cocktails, and Bloody Marys. That is at the location over in the Heights. So that is Liberty Kitchen. Great friends of ours, Lance Fegan and also Carl Eves. We'll take a break and more to come.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. We're going to end it in big style here tonight. Dynamo midfielder Eric Alexander going to join us. First, before we get to Eric, as host of Soccer Matters, I want to remind you that nothing goes better together than great friends in Bud Light. Whether it's Bud Lights when you're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, we're going down to watch the Dynamo take on Seattle in the Western Conference Final. Get out to that Dynamo game. Most importantly, grab your friends and an ice-cold bucket of Bud Lights, whether it's tonight, tomorrow, or any other day of the week. Remember, it's not about the parties. It's about the friends you made along the way. Bud Light, the official beer of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. And with that, we bring on Dynamo midfielder Eric Alexander. Eric, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're glad you're here and coming off such a huge win against Portland. I want to take you back, though, just to the injury and coming back from the injury and getting yourself back into the mix here and playing some very important minutes at this juncture.
Okay.
Yeah, so tell me about the rehab and fighting to get back into this.
Yeah, it was tough. It was, you know, my first, like, real significant injury where I've done this that long and didn't really know what to expect as far as the whole process, and it went well. I'm healthy again, which is most important. But you know, it was tough at times. But you know, it was something that, you know, now that I went through, I can appreciate, you know, being healthy a little more. And you know, when I see other guys having to rehab as well, you know, kind of just try to motivate them because I know, you know, it helped me get through when guys would, you know, reach out to me as well. So
kind of a lonely process, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is. You know, I had George Malky with me for, you know, a long time because he was rehabbing his ACL. So it was nice to have somebody there, you know, with me every day, especially because during that time the team was traveling a lot and, you know, we weren't necessarily seeing the guys that often. So it was nice to have him. Obviously, it's under unfortunate circumstances that we were both hurt, but it was, you know, nice that we were able to do it together.
You played at Indiana in college, a great program. Speak a little bit about how that might have helped prepare you for Major League Soccer.
A lot of great players, you know, have played there and played there while I was there. So I think having that MLS caliber players and, you know, just training every day, you know, gets you ready to take the next step. So it was just a good competitive environment day in and day out, which is, you know, just like it is in the MLS. So it was a very good experience.
You had an outstanding game against Portland. I thought your efficiency with the ball was wonderful, your decision-making. You have a very calming presence about you, which is very impressive. This policy of rotation under Wilmer, have you ever been under a coach that has had this big of a rotation policy? And is that something that, you know, as a player, you have to get adjusted to?
I mean, our team is very deep. We have a lot of good players and, you know, we have a lot of guys who can contribute on the field. And, you know, I think part of that goes into the rotation, keeps guys fresh, keeps guys anxious to get back into the lineup. You know, it's hard to, you know, then plan against us because you don't know who's going to be playing day in and day out. But also I think it just, you know, gives that competitive environment in training because, you know, everybody wants to earn that spot and, you know, keep themselves on the field. So, I haven't been on a team that has done it before. So it's a new experience, but, you know, it's worked out very well for us. And, you know, I'm really happy with how things have gone.
Yeah, soccer players are creatures of habit. You do like consistency. You do kind of like knowing where you stand. And in this case, you don't always know where you stand. Is there a lot of thinking when you drive home from training, Eric, about, you know, am I going to be in the lineup or not? And then second part of that question would be, how competitive are these training sessions? Are they as competitive as any training sessions you've ever, you know, been a part of in Major League Soccer, having been on a number of different teams, including the New York Red Bulls?
Yeah, I think, you know, they're just as competitive. You know, like I said, we have a lot of good players, and pretty much everybody on the roster has contributed at some point this year. And, you know, you don't really see that from other clubs. And, you know, it's, you know, trainings get pretty intense, especially when everyone's trying to, you know, earn that spot. And it's good. It's good for the guys because, you know, it keeps everybody, you know, focused and, you know, trying to do their best every day.
Eric Alexander, Dynamo midfielder, joining us after that huge win in Portland over the Portland Timbers, 2-1 that advanced the Dynamo to the Western Conference final against Seattle. That won't be for a while now. Does this long gap, Eric, does this cause any problems? You know, you kind of had some real good momentum going there. You're obviously going to lose a little bit of that with this long gap, as will Seattle and other teams in the league. Is it kind of strange to have to wait so long to play the Western Conference final?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little strange, but it gives you time to prepare, time for guys to get healthy who may have been a little bit nicked up or banged up. Yeah, I guess you lose momentum, but at the same time, we're still going to be training. Like I said, it's going to be intense. And, you know, it'll be tough, but, you know, I don't really know exactly why it's so long. I know there's a little FIFA break, but, you know, you'd think that they would just try to roll in these games. But, you know, it's long, you're right, but it should be okay.
Is it ever frustrating, the rotation policy, you know, for players? I mean, in a healthy way.
I'm sure, you know, there's individual frustrations because obviously we're all out here to compete. We're all out here to play. Nobody wants to, you know, sit or, you know, on game day, be on the bench or, you know, even in the stands. So I think it can be frustrating at times, but like I said, everyone's had opportunities and it's worked for us. So you can't. And I think we have a good group of guys who put the team in front of themselves. So everyone knows it's been working. So I think everyone, you know, kind of embraces the fact that we do it.
Eric Alexander, the Houston Dynamo, big part of the 2-1 Dynamo win at Portland, advancing them to the Western Conference final against the Seattle Sounders. Having been such a big part of that win in Portland, I got to think, isn't it fun going on the road in front of those massive crowds and going in there and getting a win and knocking Portland out of it and then you yourself being such a big part of it?
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, obviously, you want to just perform as well as you can, regardless of the crowd size. But, you know, we knew what to expect going into Portland. I had played there for a while as well, so I definitely knew what their fans were going to bring, and, you know, their other stadiums that, you know, draw big crowds as well. And they can be tough to go into and a little bit intimidating, but I thought we handled it really well.
Eric, what's it like playing next to Juan David Campesas? Because he's had an outstanding season as well.
Yeah, he's a great player. He's a very good ball winner. Endless worker. I mean, there's so many good things you could say about him. You know, he's really embraced the fact that being that one guy on our team that we know if someone needs to win the ball in the middle, you know, he's going to be there to do it, and he's going to chase down anybody. It doesn't matter how tired he is. He's just such a hard worker and an outstanding guy off the field as well.
Eric, how would you describe yourself as a midfielder if you had to maybe categorize yourself?
I don't know. That's a tough question. Maybe not one for me to answer. It's kind of a little bit weird having to talk about yourself. So I don't really know, to be honest.
But would you be a two-way midfielder, box-to-box, holding midfielder? You're certainly a wonderful possession player.
I would probably say more box to box, and, you know, I think more box to box than anything. You know, I could play holding mid, but, you know, I'm not necessarily the greatest ball winner. You know, that is why I think Juan's been so successful this year. It's because he's so good at, you know, disrupting the play of, you know, the other team. And it's just nice to be able to sit next to him and, you know, kind of help him out.
Well, Eric, it's a great blend. You certainly were 10 out of 10 with your decision making and your comfort on the ball in this one. It was a joy to watch. Thank you very much for coming on the show tonight, and best of luck against Seattle in the Western Conference Finals.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. That's Eric Alexander, Dynamo midfielder, off a very good performance against the Portland Timbers. That'll do it here tonight for producer Tyler Scott. We appreciate all his great work. Victor Ariza as well. Just as we go to break here or close the show out, we remind you, podcastarena.com for the podcast. We get about 8,000 plus downloads every month. Plus, you can get the show on iTunes as well. So keep supporting it. Keep calling in. Make sure you get over to Facebook Soccer Matters, Twitter Glenn Davis Sock. You can always hit me up there as well. And again, we thank you for tuning in here tonight. As we go away here tonight, I want to remind you about The Flat. It's a funky, no-frills night spot. Lots of DJs celebrated both in and out of town. My good friend Andre's over there. It's a chill lounge. It's got great bar fare, converted house. It's 1701 Commonwealth. So it's theflathouston.com. Great vibe over there, great atmosphere, and incredible frozen mojitos. That'll do it for tonight. Until next Wednesday, I'm Glenn Davis. Next Wednesday, we're going to be talking a lot of player development in the United States with a lot of different guests. So hope you join us. That'll do it tonight for Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.